Chapter 8. The Tower of the Angels. Will said,
"Who is this man who's got the knife?"
They were in the Rolls-Royce, driving up through Oxford. Sir Charles sat in the front, half turned around, and Will and Lyra sat in the back, with Pantalimon a mouse now, soothed in Lyra's hands.
"Someone who has no more right to the knife than I have to the alethiometer. Unfortunately for all of us, the alethiometer is in my possession and the knife is in his."
"How do you know about the other world anyway?"
"I know many things that you don't. What else would you expect? I'm a good deal older and considerably better informed. There are a number of doorways between this world and that. Those who know where they are can easily pass back and forth. In Chittagatse, there's a guild of learned men, so-called, who used to do so all the time."
"You ain't from this world at all. You're from there, ain't you?"
And again came that strange nudge at her memory. She was almost certain she'd seen him before.
"No, I'm not."
"If we've got to get the knife from that man, we need to know more about him. He's not going to just give it to us, is he?"
"Certainly not. It's the one thing keeping the spectres away. It's not going to be easy by any means."
"The spectres are afraid of the knife."
"Very much so."
"Why do they attack only grown-ups?"
"You don't need to know that now. It doesn't matter. Lyra,"
Sir Charles said, turning to her,
"tell me about your remarkable friend."
He meant Pantalimon. And as soon as he said it, Will realized that the snake he'd seen concealed in the man's sleeve was a demon too, and that Sir Charles must come from Lyra's world. He was asking about Pantalimon to put them off the track, so he didn't realize that Will had seen his own demon. Lyra lifted Pantalimon close to her breast, and he became a black rat, whipping his tail around and around her wrist and glaring at Sir Charles with red eyes.
"You weren't supposed to see him. He's my demon. You think you ain't got demons in this world, but you have. Yours would be a dung beetle."
"If the pharaohs of Egypt were content to be represented by a scarab, so am I. Well, you're from yet another world. How interesting. Is that where the alethiometer comes from, or did you steal it on your travels?"
"I was given it. The master of Jordan College in my Oxford gave it to me. It's mine by right, and you wouldn't know what to do with it, you stupid, stinky old man. You'd never read it in 100 years. It's just a toy to you. But I need it, and so does Will. We'll get it back, don't worry."
"We'll see. This is where I dropped you before. Shall we let you out here?"
"No,"
said Will, because he could see a police car farther down the road.
"You can't come into Jigatse because of the spectres, so it doesn't matter if you know where the window is. Take us farther up toward the ring road."
"As you wish. When or if you get the knife, call my number and Alan will come to pick you up."
They said no more till the chauffeur drew the car to a halt. As they got out, Sir Charles lowered his window and said to Will,
"By the way, if you can't get the knife, don't bother to return. Come to my house without it and I'll call the police. I imagine they'll be there at once, when I tell them your real name. It is William Parry, isn't it?" "Yes, I thought so. There's a very good photo of you in today's paper."
And the car pulled away. Will was speechless. Lyra was shaking his arm.
"It's all right. He won't tell anyone else. He would have done it already if he was going to. Come on."
10 minutes later, they stood in the little square at the foot of the Tower of the Angels. Will had told her about the snake demon, and she had stopped still in the street, tormented again by that half-memory. Who was the old man? Where had she seen him? It was no good. The memory wouldn't come clear.
"I didn't want to tell him, but I saw a man up there last night. He looked down when the kids were making all that noise."
"What did he look like?"
"Young, with curly hair. Not old at all. But I saw him for only a moment, at the very top, over those battlements. I thought he might be... You remember Angelica and Paolo? And Paolo said they had an older brother, and he'd come into the city as well. And she made Paolo stop telling us, as if it was a secret. Well, I thought it might be him. He might be after this knife as well. And I reckon all the kids know about it. I think that's the real reason why they come back in the first place."
"Hmm,"
he said, looking up.
"Maybe."
She remembered the children talking earlier that morning. No children would go in the tower, they'd said. There were scary things in there. And she remembered her own feeling of unease as she and Pantalimon had looked through the open door before leaving the city. Maybe that was why they needed a grown man to go in there. Her demon was fluttering around her head now, moth-formed in the bright sunlight, whispering anxiously.
Hush!
She whispered back.
There ain't any choice, Pan. It's our fault. We've got to make it right, and this is the only way.
Will walked off to the right, following the wall of the tower. At the corner, a narrow cobbled alley led between it and the next building, and Will went down there too, looking up, getting the measure of the place. Lyra followed. Will stopped under a window at the second-story level and said to Pantalaimon,
Can you fly up there? Can you look in?
He became a sparrow at once and set off. He could only just reach it. Lyra gasped and gave a little cry when he was at the windowsill, and he perched there for a second or two before diving down again. She sighed and took deep breaths like someone rescued from drowning. Will frowned, puzzled.
It's hard when your demon goes away from you. It hurts.
Oh, sorry. Did you see anything?
Stairs. Stairs and dark rooms. There were swords hung on the wall, and spears and shields, like a museum. And I saw the young man. He was dancing.
Dancing?
Moving to and fro, waving his hand about, or as if he was fighting something invisible. I just saw him through an open door, not clearly.
Fighting a spectre?
Lyra guessed, but they couldn't guess any better, so they moved on. Behind the tower, a high stone wall, topped with broken glass, enclosed a small garden with formal beds of herbs around a fountain. Once again, Pantalaimon flew up to look. And then there was an alley on the other side, bringing them back to the square. The windows around the tower were small and deeply set, like frowning eyes.
We'll have to go in the front, then,
said Will. He climbed the steps and pushed the door wide. Sunlight struck in, and the heavy hinges creaked. He took a step or two inside, and seeing no one, went in further. Lyra followed close behind. The floor was made of flagstones worn smooth over centuries, and the air inside was cool. Will looked at a flight of steps going downward, and went far enough down to see that it opened into a wide, low-ceilinged room with an immense cold furnace at one end, where the plaster walls were black with soot. But there was no one there, and he went up to the entrance hall again, where he found Lyra with her finger to her lips, looking up.
I can hear him. He's talking to himself, I reckon.
Will listened hard and heard it too. A low crooning murmur interrupted occasionally by a harsh laugh or a short cry of anger. It sounded like the voice of a madman. Will blew out his cheeks and set off to climb the staircase. It was made of blackened oak, immense and broad, with steps as worn as the flagstones, far too solid to creak underfoot. The light diminished as they climbed because the only illumination was the small, deep-set window on each landing. They climbed up one floor, stopped and listened, climbed the next, and the sound of the man's voice was now mixed with that of halting, rhythmic footsteps. It came from a room across the landing, whose door stood ajar. Will tiptoed to it and pushed it open another few inches so he could see. It was a large room with cobwebs thickly clustered on the ceiling. The walls were lined with bookshelves containing badly preserved volumes with the bindings crumbling and flaking or distorted with damp. Several of them lay thrown off the shelves, open on the floor or the wide, dusty tables, and others had been thrust back higgledy-piggledy. In the center of the room, a young man was dancing. Pantalaimon was right. It looked exactly like that. He had his back to the door, and he'd shuffled to one side, then to the other, and all the time his right hand moved in front of him as if he were clearing a way through some invisible obstacles. In that hand was a knife, not a special-looking knife, just a dull blade about 8 inches long, and he'd thrust it forward, slice it sideways, feel forward with it, jab up and down, all in the empty air. He moved as if to turn, and Will withdrew. He put a finger to his lips and beckoned to Lyra, and led her to the stairs and up to the next floor.
What's he doing?
He described it as well as he could.
He sounds mad. Is he thin? With curly hair?
Yes. Red hair, like Angelica's. He certainly looks mad. Oh, I don't know. I think this is odder than Sir Charles said. Let's look farther up before we speak to him.
She didn't question, but let him lead them up another staircase to the top story. It was much lighter up there, because a white-painted flight of steps led up to the roof, or rather to a wood and glass structure like a little greenhouse. Even at the foot of the steps they could feel the heat it was absorbing. And as they stood there, they heard a groan from above. They jumped. They'd been sure there was only one man in the tower. Pantalaimon was so startled that he changed at once from a cat to a bird, and flew to Lyra's breast. Will and Lyra realized, as he did so, that they'd seized each other's hand. and let go slowly.
Better go and see. I'll go first.
I ought to go first, seeing it's my fault.
Seeing it's your fault, you've got to do as I say.
She twisted her lip, but fell in behind him. He climbed up into the sun. The light in the glass structure was blinding. It was as hot as a greenhouse, too, and Will could neither see nor breathe easily. He found a door handle and turned it and stepped out quickly, holding his hand up to keep the sun out of his eyes. He found himself on a roof of lead, enclosed by the battlemented parapet. The glass structure was set in the centre, and the lead sloped slightly downward all round toward a gutter inside the parapet, with square drainage holes in the stone for rainwater. Lying on the lead, in the full sun, was an old man with white hair. His face was bruised and battered, and one eye was closed, and as they saw when they got closer, his hands were tied behind him. He heard them coming and groaned again and tried to turn over to shield himself.
It's all right. We aren't going to hurt you. Did the man with the knife do this?
The old man grunted.
Let's undo the rope. He hasn't tied it very well.
It was clumsily and hastily knotted, and it fell away quickly once Will had seen how to work it. They helped the old man to get up and took him over to the shade of the parapet.
Who are you? We didn't think there were two people here. We thought there was only one.
Giacomo Palandisi,
the old man muttered through broken teeth.
I am the bearer, no one else. That young man stole it from me. There are always fools who take risks like that for the sake of the knife, but this one is desperate. He is going to kill me.
No, he ain't. What's the bearer? What's that mean?
I hold this subtle knife on behalf of the guild. Where is he gone?
He's downstairs. We came up past him. He didn't see us. He was waving it about in the air.
Trying to cut through. He won't succeed when he...
Watch out!
Will turned. The young man was climbing up into the little wooden shelter. He hadn't seen them yet, but there was nowhere to hide. And as they stood up, he saw the movement and whipped around to face them. Immediately, Pantalaimon became a bear and reared up on his hind legs. Only Lyra knew that he wouldn't be able to touch the other man, and certainly the other blinked and stared for a second, but Will saw that he hadn't really registered it. The man was crazy. His curly red hair was matted, his chin was flecked with spit, and the whites of his eyes showed all around the pupils. And he had the knife, and they had no weapons at all. Will stepped up the lead, away from the old man, crouching, ready to jump or fight or leap out of the way. The young man sprang forward and slashed at him with the knife, left, right, left, coming closer and closer, making Will back away till he was trapped in the angle where two sides of the tower met. Lyra was scrambling towards the man from behind with the loose rope in her hand. Will darted forward suddenly, just as he'd done to the man in his house, and with the same effect. His antagonist tumbled backwards unexpectedly, falling over Lyra to crash onto the lead. It was all happening too quickly for Will to be frightened, but he did have time to see the knife fly from the man's hand and sink at once into the lead some feet away, point first, with no more resistance than if it had fallen into butter. It plunged as far as the hilt and stopped suddenly. And the young man twisted over and reached for it at once, but Will flung himself on his back and seized his hair. He had learned to fight at school. There had been plenty of occasion for it once the other children had sensed that there was something the matter with his mother. And he'd learned that the object of a school fight was not to gain points for style, but to force your enemy to give in, which meant hurting him more than he was hurting you. He knew that you had to be willing to hurt someone else, too, and he'd found out that not many people were when it came to it. But he knew that he was. So this wasn't unfamiliar to him, but he hadn't fought against a nearly grown man armed with a knife before, and at all costs he must keep the man from picking it up now that he'd dropped it. Will twisted his fingers into the young man's thick, damp hair and wrenched back as hard as he could. The man grunted and flung himself sideways, but Will hung on even tighter, and his opponent roared with pain and anger. He pushed up and then threw himself backwards, crushing Will between himself and the parapet, and that was too much. All the breath left Will's body, and in the shock his hands loosened. The man pulled free. Will dropped to his knees in the gutter, winded badly, but he couldn't stay there. He tried to stand, and in doing so he thrust his foot through one of the drainage holes. His fingers scraped desperately on the warm lead, and for a horrible second he thought he would slide off the roof to the ground. But nothing happened. His left leg was thrust out into empty space. The rest of him was safe. He pulled his leg back inside the parapet and scrambled to his feet. The man had reached his knife again, but he didn't have time to pull it out of the lead before Lyra leapt onto his back, scratching, kicking, biting like a wildcat. But she missed the hold on his hair that she was trying for, and he threw her off. And when he got up, he had the knife in his hand. Lyra had fallen to one side, with Pantalaimon a wildcat now, fur raised, teeth bared beside her. Will faced the man directly and saw him clearly for the first time. There was no doubt. He was Angelica's brother, all right, and he was vicious. All his mind was focused on Will, and the knife was in his hand. But Will wasn't harmless either. He'd seized the rope when Lyra dropped it, and now he wrapped it around his left hand for protection against the knife. He moved sideways between the young man and the sun, so that his antagonist had to squint and blink. Even better, the glass structure threw brilliant reflections into his eyes, and Will could see that for a moment he was almost blinded. He leapt to the man's left, away from the knife, holding his left hand high, and kicked hard at the man's knee. He'd taken care to aim, and his foot connected well. The man went down with a loud grunt and twisted away awkwardly. Will leapt after him, kicking again and again, kicking whatever parts he could reach, driving the man back and back towards the glass house. If he could get him to the top of the stairs. This time the man fell more heavily, and his right hand, with the knife in it, came down on the lead at Will's feet. Will stamped on it at once, hard, crushing the man's fingers between the hilt and the lead, and then wrapped the rope more tightly around his hand and stamped a second time. The man yelled and let go of the knife. At once Will kicked it away, his shoe connecting with the hilt, luckily for him, and it spun across the lead and came to rest in the gutter just beside a drainage hole. The rope had come loose around his hand once more, and there seemed to be a surprising amount of blood from somewhere sprinkled on the lead and on his own shoes. The man was pulling himself up.
"Look out!"
shouted Lyra, but Will was ready. At the moment when the man was off balance, he threw himself at him, crashing as hard as he could into the man's midriff. The man fell backward into the glass, which shattered at once, and the flimsy wooden frame went too. He sprawled among the wreckage, half over the stairwell, and grabbed the door frame, but it had nothing to support it any more, and it gave way. He fell downward, and more glass fell all around him. And Will darted back to the gutter, and picked up the knife, and the fight was over. The young man, cut and battered, clambered up the step, and saw Will standing above him, holding the knife. He stared with a sickly anger, and then turned and fled. Said Will, sitting down. Something was badly wrong, and he hadn't noticed it. He dropped the knife and hugged his left hand to himself. The tangle of rope was sodden with blood, and when he pulled it away...
"Your fingers! Oh, Will!"
His little finger and the finger next to it fell away with the rope. His head swam. Blood was pulsing strongly from the stumps where his fingers had been, and his jeans and shoes were sodden already. He had to lie back and close his eyes for a moment. The pain wasn't that great, and a part of his mind registered that with a dull surprise. It was like a persistent, deep hammer thud more than the bright, sharp clarity when you cut yourself superficially. He'd never felt so weak. He supposed he had gone to sleep for a moment. Lyra was doing something to his arm. He sat up to look at the damage and felt sick. The old man was somewhere close by, but Will couldn't see what he was doing, and meanwhile Lyra was talking to him.
"If only we had some blood moss, what the bears use, I could make it better, Will, I could. Look, I'm going to tie this bit of rope around your arm to stop the bleeding, because I can't tie it around where your fingers were. There's nothing to tie it to. Hold still."
He let her do it, then looked around for his fingers. There they were, curled like a bloody quotation mark on the lead. He laughed.
Hey, stop that. Get up now. Mr. Paradisi's got some medicine, some salve. I don't know what it is. You've got to come downstairs. The other man's gone. We've seen him run out the door. He's gone now. You beat him. Come on, Will. Come on.
Nagging and cajoling, she urged him down the steps, and they picked their way through the shattered glass and splintered wood and into a small, cool room off the landing. The walls were lined with shelves of bottles, jars, pots, pestles and mortars and chemist's balances. Under the dirty window was a stone sink, where the old man was pouring something with a shaky hand from a large bottle into a smaller one.
"Sit down and drink this,"
he said, and filled a small glass with a dark golden liquid. Will sat down and took the glass. The first mouthful hit the back of his throat like fire. Lyra took the glass to stop it from falling as Will gasped.
"Drink it all."
"What is it?"
"Plum brandy. Drink."
Will sipped it more cautiously. Now his hand was really beginning to hurt.
"Can you heal him?"
"Oh, yes. We have medicines for everything. You, girl, open the drawer in the table and bring out a bandage."
Will saw the knife lying on the table in the center of the room, but before he could pick it up, the old man was limping towards him with a bowl of water.
"Drink again."
Will held the glass tightly and closed his eyes while the old man did something to his hand. It stung horribly, but then he felt the rough friction of a towel on his wrist, and something mopping the wound more gently. Then there was a coolness for a moment, and it hurt again.
This is precious ointment. Very difficult to obtain. Very good for wounds.
It was a dusty, battered tube of ordinary antiseptic cream, such as Will could have bought in any pharmacy in his world. The old man was handling it as if it were made of myrrh. Will looked away. And while the man was dressing the wound, Lyra felt Pantalaimon calling to her silently to come and look out the window. He was a kestrel perching on the open window frame, and his eyes had caught a movement below. She joined him and saw a familiar figure. The girl Angelica was running towards her elder brother Tullio, who stood with his back against the wall on the other side of the narrow street, waving his arms in the air as if trying to keep a flock of bats from his face. Then he turned away and began to run his hands along the stones in the wall, looking closely at each one, counting them, feeling the edges, hunching up his shoulders as if to ward off something behind him, shaking his head. Angelica was desperate, and so was little Paolo behind her, and they reached their brother and seized his arms and tried to pull him away from whatever was troubling him. And Lyra realized with a jolt of sickness what was happening. The man was being attacked by spectres. Angelica knew it, though she couldn't see them, of course, and little Paolo was crying and striking at the empty air to try and drive them off. But it didn't help, and Tullio was lost. His movements became more and more lethargic, and presently they stopped altogether. Angelica clung to him, shaking and shaking his arm, but nothing woke him, and Paolo was crying his brother's name over and over as if that would bring him back. Then Angelica seemed to feel Lyra watching her, and she looked up. For a moment their eyes met. Lyra felt a jolt as if the girl had struck her a physical blow, because the hatred in her eyes was so intense. And then Paolo saw her looking and looked up too, and his little boy's voice cried,
"We'll kill you! You've done this to Tullio! We're going to kill you, all right!"
The two children turned and ran, leaving their stricken brother. And Lyra, frightened and guilty, withdrew inside the room again and shut the window. The others hadn't heard. Giacomo Paradisi was dabbing more ointment on the wounds, and Lyra tried to put what she'd seen out of her mind and focused on Will.
"You've got to tie something around his arm to stop the bleeding. It won't stop otherwise."
"Yes, yes, I know."
Will kept his eyes averted while they did up a bandage and drank the plum brandy sip by sip. Presently he felt soothed and distant, though his hand was hurting abominably.
"Now, here you are. Take the knife. It is yours."
"I don't want it. I don't want anything to do with it."
"You haven't got the choice. You are the bearer now."
"I thought you said you was..."
"My time is over. The knife knows when to leave one hand and settle in another, and I know how to tell. You don't believe me? Look."
He held up his own left hand. The little finger and the finger next to it were missing, just like Will's.
"Yes, me too. I fought and lost the same fingers, the badge of the bearer, and I did not know either in advance."
Lyra sat down, wide-eyed. Will held onto the dusty table with his good hand. He struggled to find words.
We only came here because there was a man who stole something of Lyra's, and he wanted the knife, and he said if we brought him that, then he..."
"I know that man. He is a liar, a cheat. He won't give you anything. Make no mistake. He wants the knife, and once he has it, he will betray you. He will never be the bearer. The knife is yours by right."
With a heavy reluctance, Will turned to the knife itself. He pulled it towards him. It was an ordinary-looking dagger with a double-sided blade of dull metal about 8 inches long, a short crosspiece of the same metal, and a handle of rosewood. As he looked at it more closely, he saw that the rosewood was inlaid with golden wires, forming a design he didn't recognize till he turned the knife around and saw an angel with wings folded. On the other side was a different angel with wings upraised. The wires stood out a little from the surface, giving a firm grip, and as he picked it up he felt that it was light in his hand and strong and beautifully balanced, and that the blade was not dull after all. In fact, a swirl of cloudy colours seemed to live just under the surface of the metal. Bruised purples, sea blues, earth browns, cloud greys, the deep green under heavy foliaged trees, the clustering shades at the mouth of a tomb as evening falls over a deserted graveyard. If there was such a thing as shadow-coloured, it was the blade of the subtle knife. But the edges were different. In fact, the two edges differed from each other. One was clear, bright steel, merging a little way back into those subtle shadow colours, but steel of an incomparable sharpness. Will's eye shrank back from looking at it, so sharp did it seem. The other edge was just as keen, but silvery in colour, and Lyra, who was looking at it over Will's shoulder, said,
"I've seen that colour before. That's the same as the blade they was going to cut me and Pan apart with. That's just the same."
"This edge,"
said Giacomo Paradisi, touching the steel with the handle of a spoon,
"will cut through any material in the world. Look."
And he pressed the silver spoon against the blade. Will, holding the knife, felt only the slightest resistance as the tip of the spoon's handle fell to the table, cut clean off.
"The other edge is more subtle still. With it, you can cut an opening out of this world altogether. Try it now. Do as I say. You are the bearer. You have to know. No one can teach you but me, and I have not much time left. Stand up and listen."
Will pushed his chair back and stood, holding the knife loosely. He felt dizzy, sick, rebellious.
"I don't want..."
he began, but Giacomo Paradisi shook his head.
"Be silent. You don't want, you don't want. You have no choice. Listen to me, because time is short. Now, hold the knife out ahead of you. Like that. It's not only the knife that has to cut, it's your own mind. You have to think it. So do this. Put your mind out at the very tip of the knife. Concentrate, boy. Focus your mind. Don't think about your wound. It will heal. Think about the knife tip. That is where you are. Now, feel with it very gently. You're looking for a gap so small you could never see it with your eyes, but the knife tip will find it if you put your mind there. Feel along the air till you sense the smallest little gap in the world."
Will tried to do it, but his head was buzzing and his left hand throbbed horribly, and he saw his two fingers again lying on the roof, and then he thought of his mother, his poor mother. What would she say? How would she comfort him? How could he ever comfort her? And he put the knife down on the table and crouched low, hugging his wounded hand, and cried. It was all too much to bear. The sobs racked his throat and his chest, and the tears dazzled him. And he should be crying for her, the poor, frightened, unhappy, dear beloved. He'd left her. He'd left her. He was desolate. But then he felt the strangest thing, and brushed the back of his right wrist across his eyes to find Pantalaimon's head on his knee. The demon, in the form of a wolfhound, was gazing up at him with melting, sorrowing eyes. And then he gently licked Will's wounded hand again and again, and laid his head on Will's knee once more. Will had no idea of the taboo in Lyra's world, preventing one person from touching another's demon. And if he hadn't touched Pantalaimon before, it was politeness that had held him back and not knowledge. Lyra, in fact, was breathtaken. Her demon had done it on his own initiative, and now he withdrew and fluttered to her shoulder as the smallest of moths. The old man was watching, with interest but not incredulity. He'd seen demons before, somehow. He'd travelled to other worlds, too.